This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of culture and society. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to young people. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis took some rest on Thursday after having entertained a heavy workload on Wednesday, punctuated by the weekly general audience. And although he took some rest, the Holy Father still found time to remind the faithful and all the people of goodwill to allow themselves to be guided by the power of love for one another. Writing on X, the former Twitter, the Pope in his message said that when goodness is not reinvested, it is lost, adding that the greatness of our lives is not measured by how much we serve, but by the fruit we bear. The Vatican on Wednesday published a partial calendar for the upcoming liturgical celebrations for Pope Francis. It focuses on the month of March and early April and includes Masses for Ash Wednesday and Jubilees, along with a group Lenten retreat for the Pope and members of the Roman Curia. The schedule of the papal celebrations was released even as the Holy Father has maintained active appointments in spite of the fact that he has been recovering from a strong cold and bronchitis for a number of days now. Lent begins on March 5th and ends on Holy Thursday, April 17th, but the calendar only goes to April 6th and does not cover events for Holy Week and Easter, which falls on April 20th. The 12th anniversary of Pope Francis' election is on March 13th. The bishops of the European Union are calling for an urgent intervention in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Their appeal comes in the wake of the escalation of violence following the resumption of attacks on Tuesday by the M23 rebels on government forces in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In a statement on Wednesday, 12th February, signed by the President of the Commission of the Bishops' Conferences of the European Union, COMES, Archbishop Mariano Crociata, the European bishops expressed deep sorrow and urgent concern over the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Goma and Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The bishops are therefore urging for quick action that they say would help to avoid a humanitarian catastrophe. The M23 rebels, claiming to defend ethnic Tutsi, have advanced southward after capturing Goma, the capital of North Kivu, last month. That offensive left thousands dead, and despite calls for a ceasefire from 24 regional leaders, the rebels have pushed on with their operations. The United Nations estimates that 6.7 million people have been displaced by violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo, with North and South Kivu most affected. The latest attacks have forced over 500,000 people from their homes this year alone. The situation for civilians in the DRC remains dire as the conflict continues to displace millions and exacerbate an already desperate humanitarian crisis. The bishops have called for greater efforts to ensure the protection of civilians and to guarantee their access to aid. They have also urged local authorities and the international community to do everything possible in order to resolve the conflict through peaceful means, warning that Rwanda's alleged support for the M23 rebels would constitute a serious violation of international law. They have also drawn attention to the extractive practices in the DRC, identified as a key factor fueling the conflict, and have called for greater transparency in this sector. Libyan authorities have in the last few days uncovered nearly 50 bodies from two mass graves in the country's southeastern desert. This is the latest tragedy involving people seeking to reach Europe through the chaos-stricken North African country. Human rights activists are saying that the discovery of the mass graves reveals the extent of human trafficking misery. Daniel Johnson tells us more.
19 bodies were discovered in Jakarta, around 400 kilometres south of the coastal city of Benghazi, while at least 30 more were found in a mass grave in the Al-Kufra desert in the southeast. It is believed that the second grave may contain as many as 70 bodies. It's not yet known how the people died, nor their nationalities, although IOM confirmed that some had been found with gunshot wounds. Here's the UN agency's Kennedy Omondi.
The discovery of these mass graves are really, really shocking. So far, 49 bodies have been found, with many more likely to be uncovered. As Libyan authorities investigate the cause of their death, IOM underscores the urgent need to protect migrants from exploitation and to strengthen search and rescue efforts.
The graves were both discovered following a police raid reportedly on a human trafficking site where hundreds of migrants were rescued. The route across the Libyan desert to the shores of the Mediterranean is often used by traffickers to smuggle people to Europe. Libyan security forces continue operations to capture the people responsible for the deaths of the migrants, and according to news reports, one Libyan and two foreign nationals have been arrested. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
More than 250 people from Africa and Asia who were trafficked to work in telecom scam centers in the state of Karen in Myanmar, the former Burma, were freed on Wednesday by a rebel armed group and transported to Thailand. Five of them from East Africa said they had spent 3 years in different scam centers conducting online criminal activities, including love scams, money laundering, and illegal gambling. They said they were tortured by the leaders of the scammers and were never paid at all, as had been promised. Public universities in Malawi have ordered all students who had been sponsored by the United States aid agency USAID either to drop out of school or to look for other sources of funding if they want to continue with their studies. This follows the freeze for 90 days announced recently by American President Donald Trump. USAID has been providing financial support to thousands of students in many Malawi universities as part of the U.S. contribution to the development of Malawi. African Union officials, policymakers, and business leaders have called upon African Union heads of state to lift all visa restrictions for Africans who wish to travel from one African country to another. The call was made on Wednesday at a high-level meeting in Addis Ababa. The officials said visa restrictions hinder regional integration, labor mobility, business and trade, as well as innovation and economic development. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Nothing is worth more than the life of a child. This is what sums up the concerns of Pope Francis when he addressed world leaders that gathered at the Vatican for the first ever global summit on children's rights at the beginning of February. With this message, the Holy Father reiterated his passionate plea for the protection of children who are victims of conflict, poverty, migration, and of a throwaway culture. And he insisted on the urgent need to listen to them. Magnus McFarlane Barrow is the co-founder and chief executive officer of the international children's charity known as Mary's Meals. Although the charity is not a Catholic organization, Mary's Meals was named after Mary, the mother of Jesus, by its founders who were inspired by their Catholic faith. Founded in 2002, Mary's Meals has grown from its first feeding operation of 200 children in Malawi to a worldwide campaign providing free school meals in hundreds of schools and feeding more than 2 million children daily. McFarlane Barrow attended the Vatican's Global Summit on Children's Rights, and on the sidelines of that conference, the chief executive officer of Mary's Meals sat down with Vatican Radio's Francesca Melo to look at how Mary's Meals is rising to the challenge of protecting children who are victims of conflict, poverty, migration, and of the throwaway culture.
How was that summit? What struck you most?
It was an amazing summit and an amazing day, so I'm still digesting it because there was a lot, in a wonderful way, lots of different perspectives, people working on very different aspects of child's rights. You know, I was asking myself, what is it that brings us together? What do we have in common in this room? Because at times it seemed so that we were coming from so many different places, and there are so many different aspects of what we need to do to enable a child to grow and to flourish and to be protected.
The panels focused on many of those, and you know, we spoke about food and education, family and healthcare, and I've had the pleasure of seeing the work you do as Mary's Meals firsthand, and I've noticed that all of these aspects seem to be enclosed within that one meal. How is that possible?
Yeah, that's a lovely thought, actually, and you're right. You know, obviously, maybe the most obvious one's food. You know, that's the first thing we do, meeting that immediate need of hunger and making sure the child's fed. And immediately when we do that, things change for that child. And then always with Mary's Meals, it's linked to that other key thing for the growing child, which is education. So we're always serving that meal in school or a place of education, and that's what brings the children into school often for the first time and keeps them there and enables them to concentrate and learn. Because so often, even, you know, last week in Malawi, talking to a young boy who described how he couldn't write before Mary's Meals because he was shaking so much, one of those horrible symptoms of hunger. So yeah, food, nutrition, education, and then health. You know, but so many children, such a high percentage of children in countries like Malawi are stunted, you know, permanently. That's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. So, you know, clearly having a good meal every day changes that. And yeah, and then I think you mentioned family. That's a lovely thought as well. And I think very real. We describe ourselves as the Mary's Meals family. You know, so in one sense, we're this big family, even though it's quite a large global movement. But I also think it's, you know, it's one of the horrors I find, and as a parent myself, I can never really pretend to fully understand this horror of parent faced with not knowing how they can feed their child tomorrow. That the anguish that causes is something awful, something I've never experienced and can't pretend to know exactly how that feels. But I see how that can destroy families. You know, I've spoken to fathers who tell me, you know, how can I speak to my children about their behaviour, about doing certain things if I can't even feed them? What respect do they have for me? So the anguish of that father is a terrible thing. So in many ways, this simple thing we do is about family too.
And another reality, perhaps quite far, at least from any I've ever known, is that of conflict. And we heard some testimonies about people coming from areas of conflict. And you as Mary's Meals are present in very dangerous areas of conflict, Ethiopia, Yemen. And so how does your work change, and what are the challenges in providing children with food in areas of conflict?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Of course, there are huge challenges, just at the most basic level, logistics, safety of people who are carrying out the work. And, you know, I think the reason why we can so often continue to carry out our work, even in conflicts like South Sudan today, or the situation in Haiti or Yemen, you know, we're serving meals in all those places. And that's really because the way we do things is always through the local community and working very often through local partner organizations who stay there no matter what. So, you know, in some senses, the work changes. Certainly the circumstances of the communities we serve, of the children, changes in awful ways. In terms of what we do, though, actually, it stays the same. Ultimately, it's still that one meal every day in a place of education. And that can be so important in times of conflict or post-conflict that we get children back into the classroom and keep them there as quickly as possible so that they don't miss years of their schooling that can be very hard to recover.
And so you depend a lot on the work being done at the grassroots level. I suppose that ties in with what you were saying about not even being able to pretend to understand certain aspects of life so distant to from ours. So the work done at the summit in the Vatican, that's institutional, global levels. And How does that go hand in hand with the work being done by organisations like Mary's Meals at the grassroots level?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that we come at this at all levels, you know, and I think we're all called to do that in different ways. So some of us, like those of us involved in the work of Mary's Meals, as you say, it couldn't be more grassroots. It couldn't be more simple and hands on. And you know, and we love that. It's this practical work of love, which allows us to, you know, to encounter those people we are serving. And it's, I suppose we would call it like a hands on ministry. And that's a beautiful thing. I wouldn't be one that would feel called to be working and trying to influence policy and trying to change the way governments are approaching these things. But thank God that there are people who are doing that. And I was listening to them in the room today and so impressed by their commitment. It's a very different kind of work, but it's still, as I said at the beginning, it's still motivated, and it came across today, it's still motivated by their love for their child, their passion to see the rights of the child protected. So it's really important we're doing this at every level. You know, some things have to be dealt with immediately and on the ground, like the work we do. But for longer term change, we need to see that systematic change happen. So yeah, it was great to be in a room together and sharing experiences of that today.
And I suppose it's all a work of hope as well. You described Mary's Meals workers as servants of hope. This is the Jubilee year of hope. And you said that children should have the fundamental right to hope. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, first of all, hope's my favourite word. It's long been my favourite word. Right at the very beginning of this work, when I was driving trucks into Bosnia during that war, we suddenly thought we better write something on the side of this truck. And my wife, as she is now, and myself, we just painted delivering hope on the side of the truck. And I've always loved that word. And, you know, not very long ago, I was in Tigray, northern Ethiopia, and in the middle of that terrible situation where there's so much hunger and so many children have dropped out of school. And I found myself in an empty school with a teacher who was talking about this situation. And he said to me at one point, you know, when there's no children left in the playground, there can be no hope left either. And, you know, that's something that's very apparent. You know, if we're not keeping children fed and in school, really, what hope is there for the future? So I think this world is crying out for hope more than ever. In those communities that are suffering conflict and extreme poverty and hunger, but actually everywhere in the world, I think right now, people are looking for hope. I think it's one of the things that attracts people to Mary's Meals is they see this thing, this simple thing that's working and is bringing hope. And that provides not only the child with hope, but maybe all of us who are involved in this mission.
There's a figure that baffles me. It's stuck with me since I first read it, and that is that it only costs €22 to feed a child for a whole year. That's, I think, £19 or $25 mm-hmm. dollars. And you mentioned at the summit that perhaps the problem is that our priorities are wrong.
Yes. Yeah, I shared at the summit the fact that if you do the sums based on those amounts, which are correct, are real numbers, that is what it costs us, we could feed all the children who currently don't have school meals in the world's lowest income countries for about $3 billion. And we spend about three times that amount on our pet dogs in the UK, which puts it into perspective, because I think one of the challenges sometimes is that we think global hunger is just too big. You know, what can we do about that? It's overwhelming, or it's just a horrible fact that we have to accept. But it absolutely isn't. It's completely unnecessary. And I suppose that's the point I was trying to make today. It's not, you know, when we talk about child hunger, we're not really discussing what's possible. We know what's possible. We live in a world that produces more than enough food for all of us. It's not like we're looking for some breakthrough or cure for hunger. We've long known what the cure for hunger is. You know, so it's really comes down to our choices. What choices are we going to make for those children? What are our priorities?
Magnus McFarlane Barrow, founder and chief executive officer of the children's charity Mary's Meals, speaking with Vatican Radio's Francesca Mello about the relevance of Mary's Meals to the challenge of protecting children who are victims of conflict, poverty, migration, and of the throwaway culture. And that is all we have time for in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. As you may have heard in our last edition, Pope Francis convened the first ever world meeting on children's rights in the Vatican on the 3rd of February to demand that children be protected from war, forced labor, trafficking and exploitation. The summit, entitled Love Them and Protect Them, brought together world leaders, religious representatives and child rights advocates. In her address at the opening of the summit, Queen Rania Al Abdullah of Jordan recalled that the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child is the most widely ratified human rights convention in history, but is hardly enforced on an equal plane. In theory, she said, the global consensus is clear. Every right for every child, Queen Rania told the gathering in the Apostolic Palace in the presence of the Holy Father.
Your Holiness, Pope Francis, thank you for convening this critical summit and for your unconditional commitment to the world's children. Years ago, you published a collection of letters from boys and girls around the world, along with your responses. In one of them, a young refugee, Muhammad, asked you, will the world be again as it was in the past? He wanted to know if his life would ever be the same. It is a question that plagues millions of children, whose entire worlds have been turned inside out by war. And it is one with no easy answers. The Convention for the Rights of the Child is the most widely ratified human rights treaty in history. In theory, the consensus is clear. Every right for every child. Yet, so many children around the world are excluded from this promise, particularly in war zones. Worse yet, people have grown desensitized to their pain. Today, one in six children on Earth live in areas affected by conflict. One in six. Every day, dozens of them are killed or maimed. They are robbed of every right to life and security, but also to education, health, privacy, and protection from abuse. Anyone who has ever cared for a child understands the instinct to shield them from distress. But in the rage of war, there is no protecting children from humanity's cruelest impulses. Our worst nightmares become their daytime. In every news report or video flagged sensitive on social media, they are there, bleeding and covering their ears after an airstrike, burned so badly their own parents can't even recognize them. Taking in horrors that have been blurred from our screens for our protection. Think about that. Their lived reality is deemed too graphic for even adults to watch. So the youngest victims of war are robbed of their most basic human right, the right to childhood. And this crime is rationalized with yet another, expelling them from the realm of childhood altogether. They are demonized, aged up, portrayed as threats, or simply dismissed as human shields. From Palestine to Sudan, Yemen to Myanmar and beyond, this unchilding creates chasms in our compassion. It stifles urgency in favor of complacency. It allows politicians to sidestep blame, to put narrow agendas above collective obligations. Your Holiness, soon after receiving your invitation to attend the summit, I read a shocking study on the psychological state of Gaza's most vulnerable children. 96% reported feeling that their death was imminent. Almost half said they wanted to die, not to become astronauts or firefighters like other children. They wanted to be dead. How did we let our humanity come to this? A status quo
that deems some children's suffering acceptable based on their name, faith, or the land of their birth. Where every child's fate depends on where they fall on some artificial line between our children and theirs. Without equal application, global commitments ring hollow. Because if a right can be willfully denied, then it is not a right at all. It is a privilege for the lucky few. As this day proceeds and children's rights are explored from every angle, we cannot lose sight of those who wake up every day and wonder, will the world be again as it was in the past? Your Holiness, your answer to Muhammad's question was this. No, when the time comes, the world will not be as it was. It will be far better than it was in the past. That beautiful vision is still entirely within our grasp, but only if we make it so. Every right for every child. That is the promise the world made to the children with disabilities, the refugees, the orphaned, and the abandoned. Whether they are missing their two front teeth or have lost limbs to war wounds, every child has an equal claim to our protection and care. No exceptions, no exclusions, no preconditions. Thank you all very much.
That was Queen Rania Al Abdullah of Jordan speaking during the Summit on Children's Rights in the Vatican on the 3rd of February. And that's all for this edition. Until the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and that is all we have time for today. Do remember to join us again at the same time tomorrow. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.